Your daughter's young, vulnerable, online. You fear the worst. Pushed to change her sex. You have some right to help her through this, but activists want to take all that away.
No. No, they don't. No, they don't, Ohio. Don't be fooled by clowns and liars.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me. Jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, 98.7 in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, 99.5 FM in Ridgecrest and China Lake. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU. In Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ. Down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ. Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ. In Seattle on KODX. Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950. KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internet, on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Verdant Square Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing Planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow. Says me, from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. It is our first opportunity to open up our phone lines to callers since Donald Trump's third indictment last week, his second criminal indictment at the federal level. This one in which he is finally being brought to justice for his attempt to steal the 2020 presidential election while serving as our sitting president. Don't be confused by what the media tells you. He has done no less than that, tried to steal an election in multiple ways, multiple times. Thankfully, he's as crappy as that as he is at pretty much everything else in his life. He was, as you know by now, charged with four felonies, including three conspiracy charges related to that failed effort, bringing the current total of charges at both the state and federal level that he now faces as the current 2024 GOP presidential frontrunner to more than 70. I actually think it's 74. I've heard some people say it's 78. It is so many charges now, we don't know how many charges Donald Trump is actually facing, Desi Doyen. Do you?
I do not, but I think we figured out that it's somewhere around the nature of his age. So it's as many, not quite as 77, as I understand it.
He is 77. He said, he told the judge in the courtroom last week during his arraignment, he was 7'7". That's how he answered, how old are you?
A little
Mr.
rattled,
President?
Maybe?
Yeah, just a little. Yeah. Anyway, we covered the actual indictment on a number of broadcasts last week, but today is our first chance to try and carve out some time, if I can, to get your thoughts on it. And if this case or the new one expected from Fulton County, Georgia District Attorney as early as this week, and I think it's going to be a big one, but I can't, I don't have time to discuss why until maybe later. We'll see. Anyway, will any of this finally break the fever among Republicans? Or it's denialism and pro-authoritarianism as usual for the once grand old party. If time allows, I hope to open up the phones a little bit later to that. 818-985-5735 is our phone number. If those of you listening live in our Southern California listening area or anywhere else across the world via the web stream on kpfk.org. If any of you would like to queue up now with any of your thoughts, you can do so. But please note, you'll need to hit button number one when you call in to join us on air. KPFK, our Pacifica Radio Network flagship station here in LA, is on Fun Drive again this month. And I do hope that those of you who enjoy the broadcast, or at least learn something from it, or even hate listen to it, might consider a pledge of any amount you can afford in order to thank and help encourage KPFK to continue to run it. If you listen on another listener-supported radio station, please consider donating to that outlet as well, as those of us who tell the truth over your public airwaves, ironically enough, have the most difficult time maintaining access to those publicly owned airwaves. We can only do it with your support, so thank you. And by the way, if you're listening later or elsewhere to our archived podcast, you are, as always, free and welcome to donate via kpfk.org. Lots of premium gifts there for you if you choose. No matter when and how you do it, however, please let them know that you are a broadcast listener, as that helps Desi and me specifically to continue our work. Okay, it was a very busy week last week, given Jack Smith's second federal indictment of Donald J. Trump, the disgraced, twice impeached, now three times indicted former president. And we've got some non-presidential election news we need to get to as well today. Wish us luck. But there is one story, really sort of two that worked together that I had to keep kicking down the road last week thanks to various breaking news all week. But there is a deadline associated with that news this week, so I want to make sure to get this out to you now, or to those of you who may know someone who has served in the military. I want to get it out right here at the top of the show so I don't miss it again before the deadline passes on Wednesday of this week, I believe. As the 2024 presidential race ramps up, President Biden has been attempting to make the case for his, frankly, remarkably effective presidency. As we have been noting in recent days, he is much better at presidenting than he is at singing his own praises and those of his administration. But we've been trying to cover just some of his administration's landmark accomplishments on everything from the economy to the environment, since much of the media is doing such a terrible job of that. This week, Biden is planning a swing out west to a number of states to tout the one-year anniversary, I think it's next week, of his landmark Inflation Reduction Act, most notably, at least to my mind and probably to Desiree's, the $400 billion, at least $400 billion in long overdue investments to help mitigate our worsening climate crisis.
Yes, of course. And remember that $400 billion is stretched out over 10 years, so it's really not as loud as big as it sounds.
And that, well, it's actually bigger if more companies take advantage of it.
Indeed it is.
And also, it not just mitigates the climate crisis, but it also returns manufacturing to the U.S. for the first time in decades, particularly as it relates to renewable energy. We noted last week, I think it was, that the IRA has already, as AP described it, I think, quote, turbocharged investment across the nation in new, clean, renewable energy-related manufacturing jobs. But there was another aspect of President Biden's presidency to date that I had not been able to get to. Here is part of it. One week ago, last Friday, the president gave final approval to the biggest reshaping in generations of the country's Uniform Code of Military Justice, stripping commanders of their authority over cases of sexual assault, rape, and murder to ensure prosecutions that are independent of the chain of command. Well, about damn time. Thank you, Mr. Biden. By signing a far-reaching executive order, Mr. Biden ushered in the most significant changes to the modern military legal system since it was created in 1950, after about two decades of pressure from lawmakers and advocates of sexual assault victims who had argued that victims in the military were too often denied any kind of justice. The White House called the changes to the military justice system, quote, a turning point for survivors of gender-based violence in the military, and said they kept promises that Mr. Biden had made as a candidate. It is a monumental step, said the National Security Council spokesperson John Kirby. Any change to the Uniform Code of Military Justice is a big deal, he noted. This one is particularly important given the scourge of sexual assault and harassment that the military still continues to wrestle with. The changes had been for years been opposed by military commanders, but they were finally embraced by the Pentagon in 2021 under the Biden administration and mandated by a law spearheaded by New York's Democratic Senator Kirsten Gillibrand. Biden signed the landmark legislation into law 2 days after Christmas that year in 2021, which then set up a 2-year process for the Defense Department to create a new regime of special prosecutors that would handle sexual assault and another handful of other high profile crimes. The final step needed to change the Uniform Code of Military Justice under the law. That was a presidential executive order, and lawmakers directed Mr. Biden to issue that order by this coming December. Instead, White House officials said Mr. Biden did so a week ago last Friday, 5 months ahead of the deadline. So this is all good news, I should suggest. The move to the to change the military justice system was galvanized back in 2020, a case of a specialist by the name of Vanessa Guillen, whose burned and mutilated body was discovered after she had tried to report instances of sexual harassment by another soldier who the Army said ultimately killed her and later himself. That case and others were frequently cited by Ms. Gillibrand and other female lawmakers, including former Rep. Jackie Speier, Democrat of California, and Republican Senator Joni Ernst of Iowa, who is a retired National Guard lieutenant colonel. She said her own experience as a victim of sexual assault informed her views on the issue. So there's some good news, whether it's been sung to the masses so they understand what's actually gone on, what's actually changed here. A lot of this had to do with Biden's defense secretary, Lloyd Austin, a retired Army general, endorsing these changes back in 2021. General Mark Milley, the chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, eventually came along. But whether people know about it, well, now you do. Which brings us to another related, long overdue, landmark military initiative under this president. That would be the passage of the PACT Act, which maybe you have heard of, maybe you have not. PACT Act is the Promise to Address Comprehensive Toxics Act, to finally extend appropriate medical benefits to service members made sick by toxic burn pits while on duty and other medical issues that they've had to fight to get coverage for at this point for many decades. Even as Republicans and Democrats alike claim that they will do anything for the men and women of the military, and then when they go out and fight or they go out and get sick at a military base, they don't take the care of them that they should. The new law, the PACT Act, was finally adopted and signed by President Biden. It expands VA health care and benefits to veterans who were exposed to burn pits, to Agent Orange. Yes, that's how far back we're going, and other toxic substances. And it adds to the list of health conditions caused by exposure to those substances. As the VA notes, this law helps provide generations of veterans and their survivors with the care and benefits they've earned and deserve. Former Daily Show host Jon Stewart has been for years a remarkably effective and frankly tireless advocate for the adoption of this legislation. And if you know anybody suffering any illnesses related to their time of service, you may want to hear Jon Stewart's recent message on the deadline this week, this Wednesday, to make sure that you or anyone you know that is entitled to these new benefits actually gets these new benefits in full.
Hey, it's John Stewart. I got a little message here for anybody who served and was exposed to any kind of toxic materials, Agent Orange, burn pits, and all these other things. They've passed the PACT Act, which expands medical benefits to survivors and veterans and medical care. Please file for those benefits. And if you do so before August 9th, then you're eligible to get those benefits backdated 1 year to when the PACT Act passed August 10th, 2022. You can file for benefits under the PACT Act anytime, but if you do it by August 9th, or even just go to va.gov/PACT Act and say intent to file, that'll hold your spot. But if you do that, you can get it done. That's for anybody exposed to, you know, any theater of war that has terrible toxic things, or military bases, or even just if you've been through Jersey, just driven through, just, I don't know that that would qualify, but it should. But please do, because the PACT Act has expanded benefits, whether you're a Vietnam era veteran, Gulf War era veteran, post 9/11 veteran, anybody who served, it's expanded those benefits, because previously the PACT Act, the government had not really done a, what kind of job did they, terrible, they did a terrible job with toxic exposures, but the PACT Act is changing all that. So please, I beg of you, get those benefits that you and your family have earned. And if you're watching this and you're not a veteran, please pass this along and get those that are eligible to go to va.gov/PACT and file for the benefits. It will be well worth it. And thank you. You've earned them.
There you go. Once again, that's va.gov/PACT, P-A-C-T. There is no deadline to apply for PACT Act benefits, but as the webpage there notes, that if you file your PACT Act claim or you quickly submit that you have an intent to file, if you do that by August 9, that's this Wednesday, you may be able to receive benefits backdated to last August 2022. So don't wait. Apply today, the VA urges, as do I. Okay, speaking of deadlines, the deadline to vote in a critical Ohio special election called by Republicans just months after they had otherwise banned special August elections. That election is Tuesday, August 8th. Is election day. I will get to that in a moment. But speaking of elections in which Republican officials had hoped people wouldn't vote, this one in the great state of Tennessee last Thursday in August, not exactly a day of the week or a month of the year that most folks are thinking about elections, the state GOP's authoritarian gambit to remove two progressive state lawmakers from elected office via supermajority, via authoritarian fiat, well, that has failed miserably as the battle between autocracy and democracy continues in these United States with, well, for now, democracy continuing to win. State reps Justin Pearson of Memphis and Justin Jones of Nashville, the two Justins, both comfortably, that's an understatement, comfortably reclaimed their legislative seats in the Tennessee House in a Thursday special election last week. Jones celebrated the victory with a tweet noting the pair will be back in the state house when a special session to discuss potential changes to the state's gun safety laws begins later this month. The landslide victories for both came almost 3 months after Pearson and Jones, two young black progressive Democrats, were expelled by Tennessee Republicans for daring to participate in a peaceful gun protest on the House floor just after another appalling mass shooting in that state. During the April demonstration, Pearson and Jones, along with Rep. Gloria Johnson of Knoxville, an older white woman who survived the GOP-led attempts to oust the entire trio, joined a group of demonstrators made up mostly of teachers and children and parents holding signs and protesting the Nashville school shooting days earlier that left three children and three school personnel dead. The group packed the state's capital, They chanted for new gun safety laws. Jones, Johnson, and Pearson all cheered on the protesters from the front of the House chamber. In response, state Republicans moved forward with efforts to oust all three of them, claiming that the three Democrats, quote, did knowingly and intentionally bring disorder and dishonor to the House of Representatives. The Republican House leaders actually compared their support of the peaceful protesters to the January 6th insurrection. Quote, this is Republican House Speaker Cameron Sexton of the wildly gerrymandered state house. He said, quote, what they did today was equivalent, at least equivalent, maybe worse, depending on how you look at it, to doing an insurrection at the state capitol. Days later, the Republicans voted to oust Jones and Pearson, both young men of color, but they did not punish Johnson, the white woman. House Republican leaders have repeatedly denied that that race was any factor at all in the expulsions. But Democrats across the country, including the third protester, Johnson, pushed back, saying that the only reason she wasn't expelled was because she is white. The expulsion drew national support for the trio, dubbed the Tennessee Three. Pearson and Jones raised more than $2 million combined for the reelection campaigns through about 70,400 campaign donations from across the country, which is an unheard of amount. For two freshman Democrats in a state house super minority. I think in Jones's race, there was only about 2,500 people voted. Anyway, while on the flip side, more than 15 Republican lawmakers had tried to funnel a bunch of cash to the campaign efforts of Jones's Republican opponent, who raised just $34,000 herself for the race. Sad. But despite the GOP efforts, Jones won approximately 78% of the votes in House District 52 against her last Thursday.
Now, I'm no math whiz, but that does sound like a definitive win.
Wait until the second one. You haven't heard the numbers on that one yet, Des. Pearson's opponent was an independent. He raised less than $400. And yes, Pearson won that election according to the currently reported results with 94% of the vote.
Okay. I am enough of a math whiz to know that is a decisive win.
Okay. Very good. Very good. Moving them, you know, if you feel like you've heard this story before, it's because when the Democrats were expelled back in April, their House seats automatically went vacant. That left about 140,000 voters in primarily black districts in Nashville and Memphis with no representation in the House at all in Tennessee. But according to Tennessee law, the respective county legislative bodies were then allowed to make appointments to fill the seats of the expelled lawmakers temporarily until a special election could be held. That was held last Thursday. But both of those men, Pearson and Jones, were unanimously voted by their respective county boards to return to the seats where they were expelled from and they were able to serve as interim House members until they won their special election. So, in fact, they were really only gone for a matter of hours. And with Thursday's elections, both Democrats have now officially won back their respective seats in special elections for the rest of their original two-year terms. Well done, Republicans. And how much did those two special elections, by the way, thanks to the racist Republicans pretending to be law and order fiscal conservatives, how much did those cost taxpayers? Just asking. And in other August, actually, let me take a call here. Let me quick call before I get to a break. Let me do that. Let me take a quick call here. Let me go to, I don't even know what he wants to talk about, but I'm already tired of hearing myself. Let's go to Art in San Diego. Hey, Art, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Hey, Brad, how are you?
I'm okay. Yourself?
I'm good. I'm happy about what happened last week. And one thing I want to is express appreciation for you as one of the few people in the media who from the beginning has framed this issue as Trump stole the election from the constitutional majority of Americans.
Yeah.
I mean, that. Why can't the mainstream media see it that way? It's maddening.
It is maddening, and I was going to, in the next block, if I have time, I'm going to play. There are some who are coming around and beginning to get it right. But, yeah, I don't understand it.
And my other point I want to make is that we, the anti-Trump constitutional majority, should, starting now, loudly proclaim that our hope is that he is the Republican nominee, not because he would be the easiest person to beat, which he might be, but to give us the opportunity to inflict a once and for all humiliating defeat on him. And so we beat him by 7 million votes last time, and we should go for 15 million this time. and also, we should start explicitly framing this. It's not Biden versus Trump. It's Americans who believe in reality and democracy versus Trump and his cult his reality denying cultists. So I appreciate everything you're doing, and let's make Trump the biggest loser in American history.
Oh, he already is. But I hear you, Art. Thank you very much. I appreciate that call. Our phone number is, thanks, Art, really do, 818-985-5735. Let me get to, before I get to that break, though, as long as we're talking about elections, and we'll come back, we'll talk about Trump if you want to talk about him some more. Always happy to talk about Donald Trump. Sort of. In other August special election news today, with authoritarian Republicans hoping to scam voters, to scare voters, to lie to voters, and or hoping voters just don't show up to vote at all, here is what a lot of folks in Ohio have been seeing on their TV machines in recent weeks.
Your daughter's young, vulnerable, online. You fear the worst. Pushed to change her sex or to get an abortion. You have some right to help her through this. But activists want to take all that away. Under their proposed amendment to the Ohio Constitution, the state shall not interfere with individuals getting abortions or sex changes, meaning you could be cut out of the biggest decision of her life.
So, yeah, talk about misleading. Nobody is going to make your daughters have to get a sex change without your permission. It means the state would actually, in fact, the state would be cutting out her decision, not you, not the parents. And oh yeah, that has nothing to do with what is on the Ohio ballot on Tuesday. The ad is part of a multi-million dollar effort to hoax Ohio voters into thinking that Tuesday's issue one is something that it is not. The effort of is being fronted by this group calling themselves deceptively Protect Women Ohio. And that spot, among others, was fact-checked by the Ohio Capital Journal, an independent news organization, as false. So that's the kind of nonsense that Republicans are trying to hoax voters into believing that issue one is about. Instead, Ohioans will decide on Tuesday whether to support issue one, which is a proposed ballot measure that would simply make it harder, more difficult for voters to amend the state constitution in the future, like, for example, this November, when citizens have placed an initiative on the ballot to protect reproductive freedoms and to write that into the state constitution, as lawmakers in the gerrymandered Ohio state legislature continue to attempt to ban those freedoms for their constituents. The issue on Tuesday's ballot in this special election was placed there by Republican lawmakers just a few weeks ago, hoping to make it more difficult for the citizens' led rights initiative to be adopted in November by hereafter requiring a 60% supermajority for the adoption of future ballot initiatives. The one that Republicans are hoping to adopt on Tuesday in Ohio would only require a 50% plus one majority for passage, as all previous such ballot measures have required, going back hundreds of years in Ohio. This August special election also comes just a few months after those same Republicans in the state legislature had fought to make August elections unlawful. And they were successful in that. They actually passed legislation to ban August elections, and then they turned around just weeks later and made a special exception for themselves in order to try and prevent the November ballot measure to protect abortion and other reproductive rights. And supporters of Tuesday's authoritarian issue one have therefore been lying about what the measure actually does. It actually makes it harder to adopt any and all future initiatives and makes it even harder to place them on the ballot. But the far right wingers are out there pretending that this is about taking away your parental rights to prevent your kid from having a sex change without your knowledge or something.
Yeah, it's some really amazing nonsense, misleading lies, and fear-mongering. I mean, the title of one of those ads is Fear the Worst.
Exactly.
And they're literally coming out and saying, you must fear the worst. This is be very afraid of.
Now, because Ohio has not held a statewide election in August since 1926, Republicans had hoped, and many were initially concerned, the turnout would be low. And yet, as of Friday, so just days ago before the Tuesday election, almost 600,000 Ohioans had voted early on issue one since early voting began on June 23. Those are huge numbers. Which, of course, those in favor of rights and freedoms, in this case, Democrats and others opposed to making direct democracy virtually impossible in the otherwise gerrymandered state, they hope that's a good sign that issue one will go down to defeat on Tuesday, clearing the path then for the November initiative, which currently polling shows is supported by a whopping 58% majority of voters, if not the 60% that would be required for passage if issue one succeeds on Tuesday. Data shows turnout has only been increasing throughout the entire early vote period, with over 223,000 votes cast over just last week. Last week, the Ohio Capital Journal reported that early turnout numbers were already running higher than the entirety of last year's midterm primary elections. A recent change in state law, not to make it easier for voters, I promise you, took away early in-person voting on the Monday before election. So polls were closed on August 7, and some Ohioans may have a different polling location than usual because the August 8 election was approved in May. A number of schools and churches that are typically serve as polling locations had already had other activities on their schedules, and they were unavailable on election day. As of last Wednesday, election officials had recruited over 32,000 poll workers statewide. Well, that's good. It surpassed their goal of 31,800. However, according to the Secretary of State's office, to their poll worker tracker, 50 of Ohio's 88 counties still had not met their goals for poll worker recruitment, as many folks these days, aside from it being the middle of summer, many folks, after years of being threatened by right wingers, well, poll working has become a seemingly dangerous job. It is hard to get those workers. And Ohio's Secretary of State, Frank LaRose, who successfully led the fight against August elections back in January of this year, calling them low turnout, expensive ripoffs for taxpayers. Well, that was at least until Ohio Secretary of State Frank LaRose then became the lead supporter of holding a special election in August on issue one to try and take away rights from voters in the upcoming elections in November. And last week, just 5 days before Ohio's special election, according to Fox 8 in Cleveland, polling locations were changed for tens of thousands of voters in Cuyahoga County, That's Cleveland and Summit counties and potentially others in the Buckeye State. Voters who plan on heading to the polls in person in Ohio on Tuesday. I think I'd actually warned last week that, boy, voting early would be a good idea given this is Ohio and the dirty tricks they're going to play. But voters who are going to vote on Tuesday now, double check you're going to the right place. Apparently, more than 47,000 voters are affected by these changes to some 50 voting precincts in Cuyahoga and Summit counties alone, not to mention those in the Columbus area and Franklin County, where we have folks maybe listening at our great affiliate WGRN up there. So check before you go to vote that your polling place is where you think it is. You can supposedly check your local county board of elections website for polling locations. The changes are reportedly temporary, only affecting the August 8th special election, of course.
Of course. And I'm also seeing reports of very long lines because of this high demand. Now, of course, we don't know how the voting is going to go. So it's a good idea that if you know somebody in Ohio to let them know, hey, if you might not know, there's a special election on Tuesday. You might want to speak up about whether or not you think Ohio voters should be able to continue passing voter-led initiatives with a simple majority, as has been done for decades, centuries in Ohio. Yep. So
yeah, we will see if those huge early voting numbers actually do translate into opposition to issue one. Opposition would be, in this case, support of democracy, support of majority rule. We will, of course, keep our eyes on the matter and for any trouble at the polling places around the state on Tuesday. But hey, Ohio, you got this. All right, I need to take a quick break here, but I would, of course, welcome your calls on any of those stories or any of the others in the news. These are, for the moment anyway, still your public airwaves at 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. If you would like to ring in on any of those things or anything else, like our caller Art there, who I actually thought was going to talk about something else, which is why I jumped him to the head of the line. I thought he was going to oppose me on something. I'm disappointed to hear he did not. But you are welcome to do so at 818-985-KPFK. On Donald J. Trump for his latest indictment for his attempt, along with several conspirators, to, as Art said, steal the 2020 election. Thank you, Art. Will that indictment finally break the GOP fever? And will they realize that they are being led around by a grifting, cult-leading charlatan? Or will they continue to get behind that grifting, cult-leading charlatan to become the next president of the United States in 2024? Or will yet another upcoming indictment, this would be his fourth in the great state of Georgia, which could come any day, any moment, any hour now, would that make a difference? Curiously, some of his 2024 Republican opponents are finally beginning to figure out that he's got a huge weak spot there, and they are taking, let's call them, baby steps towards trying to exploit it. Anyway, 818-985-5735 is our phone number. Some of those baby steps and your calls are straight ahead on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman, and you are listening to the world-famous Bradcast.
Five major corporations now own over 80% of all media in the United States, but they don't control us. The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Your support helps us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations across the country. You can make a real difference by supporting independent media. This country ain't gonna save itself, but we can all do it together. Join us at Bradblog.com/donate. That's Bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Well, don't you know? That's the sound of the men working on the chain gang. That's the sound of the men working on the chain gang all day long.
All right, well. We don't want to get ahead of ourselves yet, just yet. But, I don't know, maybe someone will be working on a chain game before long if things keep going.
Republicans are working very, very hard to make sure that Trump is shielded from any kind of legal accountability for trying to steal the 2020 election.
Yes, they are working very hard. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from Bradblog.com. I would love to take your calls on that or anything else you would like to talk to me about. 818-985-KPFK is my phone number, 818-985-5735. Hit button number one, because we are in fun drive right now, or hit button number two. That's good, too. He has, as you know, been charged with four criminal felonies, including three conspiracy charges just last week alone related to that failed effort to steal the 2020 presidential election. And as the 2024 race heats up, incredibly, Donald Trump is still the front runner for some reason in the Republican Party. Now, the bulk of the media continue to go to extraordinary lengths to not use the word, the most simplest explanation, the most accurate terms to help Americans understand exactly what Donald Trump did. The mainstream media can't seem to do it. Democrats can't seem to do it, at least the majority of them. So let me be clear. Donald Trump tried multiple times to steal the 2020 presidential election from the American people. The bulk of the media continue to go to extraordinary lengths to not use those words. They describe it as his efforts to undermine or reverse or undo or roll back or subvert the election results, to question or challenge them, making it easy for Republicans to minimize the fact that a sitting president of the United States tried to steal an election, a presidential election before our very eyes, something which, had a Democrat done it, Republicans would be accusing him or her of it constantly, and they would be right to do so. And because Republicans would be doing it, media would be repeating it every day for them. Whenever I find someone in the corporate media who is accurately reporting what happened, I do try to highlight it. Last week, it was Joy Reid on MSNBC who said, and she follows me on Twitter, and this I thought might explain it, but she said this during post-indictment coverage.
This is Donald Trump conspiring to commit an armed robbery, to steal the votes of the people in those states, to steal the election from them, to steal the election in each of these states.
There you go, Joy. Way to go. Is that so difficult? Now, as listener Ron up in Michigan wrote in to me last week via bradcast@bradblog.com, he actually complained that I needed to give Chris Hayes, also on MSNBC, his show follows Joy Reid, I needed to give Chris Hayes credit for doing the same. He wrote, quote, "You should give Chris Hayes credit for consistently saying, steal the election." I don't get to watch Chris's show much, so I do appreciate the help from listeners. And indeed, Ron was kind enough to send in a pointer to just one example. Here was Chris Hayes last Thursday, the day of Trump's second federal arraignment. This one on four felony charges related to, well...
No mugshot was taken the ex-president, but his fingerprints were taken. There are no cameras allowed in federal court, but we have these sketches where Donald J. Trump, the 44th president of the United States, was arraigned, 45th president of the United States, was arraigned on four felony counts for his attempts to steal the election.
What? What? Thank you, Chris Hayes. Again, not that difficult. And if we have any reported instances of anybody who is not on MSNBC or on the broadcast referring to stolen elections by Donald Trump in 2020, we will, of course, let you know. But credit where it's due with Chris Hayes there. Also credit where it may not be due with some of the Republican candidates who are running against Donald Trump. I'll get to that in a second, but some folks want to get in here with some calls and thoughts and questions. 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. Let me go to Martellus in Los Angeles. Hey, Martellus, welcome to the Bradcast.
Thank you, Brad. I lived in Cincinnati when Mayor when Jerry Springer was mayor, a friend of mine named J. Kenneth Blackwell became mayor after that.
Oh, boy.
He just did two books on the fact that he said that Obama was trying to do the same thing that Trump was doing. Also, him and Carl Rove trash votes during one of the elections. Please Google J. Kenneth Blackwell.
Oh, I know J. Kenneth Blackwell, Martellus. You want to talk about J. Kenneth Blackwell? I hear that he's your friend. You say he's your friend?
We lived in the same building in college.
Okay. Is he still your friend?
He's not my friend now.
Oh, good. That's good for you, Martellus, because and we're going to turn you down just a little bit Wendell, because he's got some wind blowing in, so turn it down just a little bit. But Martellus, J. Kenneth Blackwell is a terrible guy. He is a vote suppressor. He maybe single-handedly is responsible for handing the Ohio's election in 2004 to George W. Bush under what our let's be kind and say unlawful means. He's just a huge vote suppressor, and he has gone on to take wingnut welfare in the years since leaving office to go around the country and to lie about election fraud. So did you know that? And is that why you are no longer friends with J. Kenneth Blackwell, Martellus?
Yes, it is. He was a Democrat when he was mayor. Then he became Republican. Mm. He's been a vote suppressor ever since.
Yep.
What I wanted to know also, Brad, what you're talking about, is this happening in Hamilton County and Butler County, which is in the Cincinnati area,
yeah,
about the activity of what you're saying about this legislation that they're passing in other parts of Ohio to suppress votes or make it possible for people not to be able to vote?
Okay, yeah. And in fact, it is a statewide election. So these problems could happen anywhere, especially if there's a shortage of poll workers and they decide at the last minute we need to close down a polling place because we just don't have enough people to staff it. That's why I've been, you know, telling people to vote early. But yes, everywhere across Ohio is welcome to vote on issue one on Tuesday. The question is, I don't know all of the places where they have shut down polling sites. I know they have in Franklin County, which is Columbus. I know they have in Cuyahoga, which is Cleveland. So it would not surprise me if the same thing was going on in Hamilton County. So I would recommend to our Ohio listeners out there, and frankly, our listeners everywhere in the country, these vote suppressors, be it J. Kenneth Blackwell, be it their current Secretary of State, Frank LaRose, they are now getting desperate. It's autocracy versus democracy, and they're going to use every autocratic means they can to prevent you from voting, to take away direct democracy, as they're doing now in Ohio. This is going to get worse before it gets better, but it's going to get better if people stand up at the polls and vote. It's that simple, but you may have to fight like hell to cast that vote, Martellus.
Could you review his last two books with an attorney that claims that Obama was trying to do the same thing Trump is doing to try to overturn the government?
No.
Please review that. I want to hear your commentary about his latest two books with an attorney.
Because there's not enough misinformation out there, I now got to go spending time to get this tired old 2004 loser of a Secretary of State read his book, his two books, and then come and tell you what's wrong about them? I mean, I have no idea what it is. Can you tell me what his claims are that Barack Obama was doing that is the same as Trump when it comes to elections? Can you summarize that for me?
Speaking, I just Googled it the other day, and more or less he said that Obama was planning to do the same thing that Trump was doing, but it never was exposed the exact details. I Googled it, and I got to review it again.
Yeah.
But he was being interviewed by another journalist. And he sounded real good, but I haven't confirmed. That's why I figure you're a better expert than me.
Yeah.
In reviewing this commentary.
Yeah, he always sounds real good. The fact of the matter is, He's full of crap. No, Barack Obama was not attempting to steal his second term in office, no matter what it is that J. Kenneth Blackwell takes blood money in order to lie to the American public about. But I will keep my eyes out for it. My email address, Martellus, if you want to send me a specific quote from the book or something, I am bradcast@bradblog.com, and I'd be happy to look at it.
Thank you, Brad. I appreciate you. You have a great show. You're a great journalist.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate you as well. Appreciate the call. 818-985-KPFK is our phone number. 818-985-5735. Let me go to Dowd. Is that how I say his name?
Dowd.
Dowd in... there we go. Hang on. I still don't know how to operate telephones. Been doing this for 20 years, still don't know how. Dowd in Compton. There we go. Welcome to the broadcast, sir, I think. Sir?
What's going on? How y'all doing?
There we go. I'm doing okay. How are you, Dowd? Is that how you say your name?
Yes.
Okay.
I just have one question, you know, and I've been, like, you know, asking us around on different websites and things like that, but can you give me your take on somebody who has been impeached two times and has multiple indictments, some pending, is allowed to run for president? I just don't understand that. You know, he's got all these cases against him, yet he's going to be allowed to run for president?
Yep. Yep.
Can you help me make sense of that?
Yeah, I think I can, because if you are impeached, and which he was, and then you have a trial in the Senate, which he was twice, the second time regarding January 6th, in which the Republicans joined with the Democrats for a 57-43 majority to find him guilty of inciting that insurrection on January 6th. Despite 57-43 vote, that's not enough to remove him from office in an impeachment trial. It has to be a supermajority. It has to be two-thirds of the vote. And they weren't able to get that many Republicans. They couldn't find that many honest Republicans. So they couldn't remove him from office, and they couldn't then vote to disqualify him for future office. So he's free to run again. Now, there is an exception to that, however, and that is the insurrection disqualification clause in the U.S. Constitution, Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, which essentially says that if you've taken the oath of office and then you turn around and insurrect against the government, that you are no longer qualified to run, to be in office or to run for office. And it is that Section 3 of the 14th Amendment that some folks are out there, we've talked about it on the show, trying to reach out to secretaries of state around the country and say, look, this guy is disqualified from the ballot under Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. But that for having aided and abetted an insurrection, that constitutional clause, however, needs to be taken up by those people who decide if Donald Trump is qualified for the ballot. And the folks, for example, at freespeechforpeople.org have been working very hard to get Secretary of States around the country to say, nope, Donald Trump does not qualify. We will see if that happens. But short of that, yeah, I got news for you, Dowd. He could not only be impeached and indicted, he could be convicted, he could be jailed, and he could still run as president from jail. It has been done before.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't understand, but anyway, you know, thanks for that.
I know that you feel like you don't understand, but here's the thing. You do understand. Yes, it is that insane. As it sounds, it is that insane, and yet that is our system of government until we change it. We do have democracy. We can try to rewrite the Constitution. We can try to rewrite the laws. But I know you feel like you don't understand, but the news is you do understand. It is just that nuts.
Yeah, okay.
Got it?
Thank you for your reply, and keep up the good work. I really enjoy listening to your show.
Thank you, my friend. I greatly appreciate that. 818-985-KPFK. Do we have time for one? Maybe one or two quick ones. Let's see. Let's get to Mike in Los Angeles. Hey, Mike, welcome to the broadcast. I only got about 30 seconds or so for you, unfortunately.
Hey, Red. I remember a guy on your show many months ago saying that Trump was guilty of advocating the overthrow of the U.S. government mm-hmm. by force and violence.
Yep.
I think it was me.
Ah, there you go. Well, I know some people are paying attention that, you know, section. I should point that viewer to, well, that listener, I mentioned freespeechforpeople.org. I think you can go to 14.3.org and get immediate information on the disqualification clause, the insurrection disqualification clause in the U.S. Constitution.
And as to your question, whether there will the number of indictments that there will be altogether against Trump, even discounting Georgia, there will be more than there are now. He can't help himself. He has the emotional maturity that suggests that Bart Simpson is a very solid and mature individual.
Broad Simpson?
Bart Simpson.
Oh, Bart Simpson. Bart Simpson is, by way of comparison, you're right. I say Bart for president, 2024. Thank you, Mike. I appreciate the call. Good to hear from you, my friend. And one more. Can I get Jose? Jose in Los Angeles. Hey, Jose. Welcome to the broadcast.
Hi. Great show as always.
Thank you, sir.
I just wanted to add a question to Donald Trump. Why is he allowed to run? Why is Ted Cruz allowed to run? He's from Canada. Thank you. Keep up the good work.
Well, we can't knock him out just because he's from Canada. However, that would keep him, if he was not a natural-born U.S. citizen, that would keep him from being able to run for president, even though he does try to run for president. There's questions about his citizenship and so forth. But a case can be made that he also participated in the insurrection and therefore should be qualified from the ballot next time he tries to run. Working on it. A lot of accountability. Not nearly enough time. Thank you for your help today to everyone, to all of my callers, to my board operator, Wendell Handy. Thank you, sir. No mistakes, A+, no notes. And to my producer, Desi Doyen, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program, you can always download it for free anytime at bradblog.com. Drop me an email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com on the Facebooks and the Twitters and the Mastodons. I am simply The Brad Blog. We'll see you there until we see you here. Hopefully tomorrow. I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
Listening to the broadcast. We are 100% listener supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.